Life comes with a lot of decisions, and it can be hard to know the right path sometimes. A therapist can help you map out what you really want, so you trust yourself to make great choices and feel excited about the future. BetterHelp offers convenient, professional online therapy on your schedule, however you want it, by phone, chat, or video call. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/positive today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/positive.
You realize we spend a third of our life sleeping? I know, stuck in traffic was a good guess too, but now that you know you sleep so much, why aren't you sleeping on the most comfortable mattress arguably made in America? A brand new iComfort Eco by Serta. It's supportive and designed to keep you cool, comfortable, and feeling restored. Or check out Serta's Perfect Sleeper for pressure-relieving comfort and support while maintaining a balanced temperature. Serta mattresses made right here in Michigan, and they have been for over 110 years. Go to Serta.com. Find a retailer near you. That's Serta.com.
A really bizarre. Bob Huggins now saying he never resigned at West Virginia after originally making homophobic comments on a radio station and then getting arrested for DUI, and we thought he resigned. Now he says he didn't. He's trying to get his job back, which he won't, and he's threatening to sue. And then Pat Fitzgerald on Friday, he was suspended 2 weeks after an hazing investigation. More information did come out over the weekend, and now he's out as the head football coach at Northwestern. Let's head out to the guest line right now and welcome in a man that's covered college football for a long time for The Athletic, and that, of course, is Matt Fortuna. Matt, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
Hey, Zach. Doing well, buddy. How are you?
So how do you react to what has happened here at Northwestern in what is truly a bizarre situation in the last 72 hours or so?
Yeah, it's shocking. It really is. I mean, you know, once this thing got to the point of no return, which in my opinion really happened Saturday with the Daily Northwestern report, I thought there was an inevitable conclusion to this. But it's shocking, to your point, 72 hours or so ago, we're talking about Friday in the summer in Northwestern as a news dump of a headline where, you know, the report on our internal investigation into hazing is complete. It was found to be valid, but the coaches had no knowledge of it, and therefore Pat Fitzgerald will serve a 2-week unpaid suspension, which was during his probable vacation time. So I thought, you know, looking back on it, very naive and stupid, frankly, of the administration to think they could brush this thing under the rug, especially at a school that churns out incredible journalists by the dozen. I mean, today alone, there were two different Northwestern student outlets reporting further allegations about the program's culture, in addition to a local radio report about the culture under the baseball program and Coach Jim Foster. So I'm just really surprised that, especially in light of the Mike Plisky deal 2 years ago, the AD who was forced to resign after 9 days, that the school misplayed this so badly from a public relations standpoint. Which doesn't even get to the fact that Pat Fitzgerald, probably the most respected guy among his peers in coaching, is no longer employed by the only school, not only school, but you know, the school he played for and was a legend at, both as a coach and a player. And oh, by the way, camp opens next month for a team coming off a 1-win season.
Well, you said
year. So other than that, everything's calm here.
Yeah, you said it. It does seem like from what happened from Friday to Monday that Northwestern thought, because it's Pat Fitzgerald, because it's a legend, you know, we'll just give him a 2-week suspension, which is really nothing this time of the year. It will get swept under the rug. Probably then no one will care about it. And then after the 2 weeks, this will all go away and we'll still have our football coach. It's just, how dumb is Northwestern to think that nothing else would come out here?
Yeah, it's really surprising. Now, look, the president there, Michael Schill, is relatively new. He took over in September. I don't know what the dynamic is like there as far as his relationship and trust with the athletic department, with Pat Fitzgerald, and with other involved parties. But once he released that statement himself Saturday night, backtracking, and he did it essentially unilaterally, from my understanding, you know, most people at the university were not expecting anyone to say anything that day. And at 11 p.m. Central Time Saturday night, the president puts out a statement saying, I'm reevaluating my decision. That to me was okay. Everyone's kind of in CYA mode right now. My understanding, and other people have reported this as well, is that what was detailed in the Daily Northwestern report on Saturday was exactly what was in the actual investigative report that the powers that be in Northwestern read and were aware of. And after reading that, decided that a 2-week suspension was just for Pat Fitzgerald. I know he's a coaching legend. I know he's a Northwestern legend. Selfishly, you know, no one's been better to work with in the media coaching wise and Pat Fitzgerald, but to read those allegations that were proven to be founded according to the law firm you hired, and to think, ah, it's Friday, we'll suspend him for 2 weeks in the off season, this thing will go away, enjoy your summer on the lake, your weekend on the lake. It reeks of arrogance. It really does, from an administrative standpoint, especially, again, when you look at the big market you're in, the big media market you're in. You look at the number of hungry reporters you have both on and off campus, who, not trivializing the hard work they put in, but, you know, they're able to do what a law firm in some ways wasn't able to do, right? And they're able to do it in a matter of 24 hours, get these people on the phone and give them a play-by-play publicly of what they alleged happened. And once that cat's out of the bag, once, you know, those allegations, and they're pretty brutal, once they're out there for the public to consume, you're playing from behind. And the longer they waited on this thing, the worse and worse it was going to get. Again, you saw multiple other reports today, you know, alleging culture issues within the program. And it's only Monday, right? This thing was going to reach ahead one way or another. It's crazy how quickly it happened. It's crazy at the time of the year it's happening. It's crazy it happened to the guy who, frankly, you know, 3 months ago would have been the last guy, I think, to ever get fired for culture or player treatment issues. But that's where we are right now. It's 2023. It's almost the college football season, and Northwestern needs a new leader.
And the other part about this, Matt Fortuna, and this shouldn't be what determines that gets someone fired, but, you know, the reaction by the public does play a role in everything. There's nothing to talk about right now. We're in a dead period in sports. Yep. So they thought, just 2 weeks and nothing else would come out. Once again, it's the definition of stupidity.
No, look, there's a reason, and the Big 12's doing it this week, but there's a reason the SEC used to always do their media day this week during the All-Star break for MLB, because it's the only pro sport going on right now. No college sports going on right now, and it's a great way to garner attention. And in this case, it was a terrible way to garner attention if you're trying to hide something, as the leaders at Northwestern were. So, again, gross miscalculation on their part. A lot of moving parts here to be seen, starting with, frankly, the status of the president, who put himself in a corner here, who, again, nothing changed other than the public reaction between Friday and Saturday night, which was what precipitated the eventual firing of Pat Fitzgerald. Is the president in trouble? Is the athletic director in trouble, especially with reports about dysfunction within the baseball program coming to light publicly today? You know, for so long at Northwestern, there was the Holy Trinity. There was the triumvirate. It was the president, Morton Shapiro, the athletic director, Jim Phillips, who's now the ACC commissioner, and the head football coach slash beloved alum, Pat Fitzgerald. It was about as reliable of a brand in college sports as you could find this decade. And now all three are gone. And I don't know who's going to be in any of those three seats come a month from now, because this thing's moving really fast and everyone's scrambling to figure out what's what.
Originally, I was reading on Friday that they said, even though he got the 2 week suspension, that it was unclear what the coaches actually knew. Do you think that matters? Because clearly if they know, it is definitely bad. But even if they don't know, how are you the CEO of a football program and not knowing what's going on in your locker room?
Right. I mean, I think there are varying degrees there, right? Like it matters whether you knew, and it matters whether you didn't know, because if you didn't know, you should know. That doesn't mean you were encouraging it. That doesn't mean you were okay with it. But look at every post-game press conference or Monday press conference by every coach in the country. They all say it starts with me, right? This one's on me. This falls with me. And that means all the good that we praise your program for, and it means all the bad that we criticize your program for. And so especially for a coach with that big of a personality, a quote-unquote player's coach, who, again, was kind of upheld as the standard for how to run a clean program, for how to treat people the right way and have a positive culture. It's surprising. It's disappointing. It really makes it a hard hole to come out of. And let's not beat around the bush here either. We're talking about a team that won one game last year and three games the year before. So I think a lot of people who maybe are powerful there and not as into it with football would say, what are we bending over backwards to keep this guy for? It's not like he's winning us games right now.
Talking to Matt Fortuna, when you look at the future of Pat Fitzgerald, we've seen guys go through a lot and a lot worse in college athletics. And if another school thinks that coach could win him games, they bring him in. I know just a little while ago, there was speculation about maybe Pat Fitzgerald being an NFL head coach, the Green Bay Packers a few years back. What do you think the future is for Pat Fitzgerald in college athletics?
No, it's a good question. I mean, he's a young man by his industry standards, right? I know he's been around forever, but he's not yet 50. He's got one kid on that Northwestern roster right now. He's got two more who are local high school players. He's a Chicago guy through and through. I doubt this is it for him. To your point, we're talking about college coaching here, but you know, a lot of people have done a lot worse and been accused of a lot worse and have not had trouble finding gameful, meaningful employment within the coaching world.
And quickly.
Not long after. And yeah. Quickly. But I do think, look, Pat Fitzgerald has been contacted by every single NFL team in some capacity during his 17 years as Northwestern's head coach. He's been reached out to by God knows how many bigger football programs. He's had opportunities. I'm sure he still will have opportunities. I don't know what shape or form those opportunities will be, especially given the timing of this right now. So it remains to be seen. Does he want to leave Chicago? Does he want to get right back into it? You know, he's not going to need to worry about money, I don't think. I don't think they're firing him for cause. I don't think they'll have a case to fire him for cause after the way they bungle this publicly. So I think he'll get paid, even though he's already a pretty rich man by normal people standards. I think something will eventually turn up for him. I think he'll be very strategic about it because he's been strategic about everything. And he's not going to jump into something just for the sake of jumping into it.
And Northwestern's first game is up against Rutgers on September 3rd. It's so late in the year. I remember when the Chris Beard situation happened in season, they made Rodney Terry the interim, and I don't think they expect him to be the full-time head coach, but he had a great year, and he ended up getting that tag. An interim here, and then you figure out who the next head coach is going to be in, what, December probably?
I think that's the most likely scenario. Now, David Braun, who was hired as defensive coordinator this offseason, is taking over. The role was described to me, I was specifically told, this is not an interim role, this is not even an acting role, but he's the leader of the program right now. The administration has yet to decide how they're going to go forward as far as determining their leadership structure for this coming season. You know, I hate to put this in the same sentence as Baylor because it's a completely different situation, but you know, Baylor had a coach get fired in the middle of June and they brought in Jim Grobe as kind of a caretaker for the rest of the year. Is that the approach Northwestern wants to take here? I don't know. You better hope you find a good guy if you do that. I mean, Paul Chryst knows his way around the Big Ten. Now, I know he's an analyst at Texas right now, but you know, he's a credible name who I think would command the respect of that locker room from the moment he walked in there. I think it's much more likely they go with an interim role on staff and conduct a thorough search both in season and postseason, because they can't screw this one up. And it leads to another question, right? Who's actually going to be making this hire? Will this AD, will this president be the ones in charge to chart the course for the future of Northwestern football, which, by the way, has poured $800 million in donations into blowing up this current stadium after this year, going homeless for the next 2 years, and then building a new stadium. So the job under normal circumstances, I think, would be very, very attractive in the Big Ten. Right now, you're walking into a bit of a tire fire from a dysfunctional administration standpoint. And, oh, by the way, you're recruiting to no home field for the next 2 seasons.
Matt Fortuna, maybe I'm wrong in saying this, but I'm only viewing it from the national level. How has this kept quiet so long, especially in 2022 and 2023? But was there a lot more here locally?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, this weekend, yes. But, you know, the allegations that precipitated this investigation were brought forward to the university in November. At the end of a one-win season. My timeline could be off here, but I believe they announced that they were investigating these allegations in January or so, around early winter. And candidly, it kind of got forgotten about locally and nationally. And it wasn't the first thing I was expecting to see in my inbox Friday morning. Oh, yeah, like, you know, I see the headline, I see the news release, say, oh, yeah, that thing. Like, you know, does that make me a bad reporter? I don't know, possibly. It just wasn't something that was at the top of the radar, but I don't think that it's not like there were massive allegations before this weekend. And we could go into a whole other conversation about, you know, locker room ethics and guys being guys and yada, yada, yada from 15 years ago versus now. I think it's a completely different world and climate we're in right now, mostly for the better, as far as not keeping these things a secret, but it's a fair question, right? Because a lot of people were speaking up in the 72 hours since this initially broke. And it's not painting the prettiest national picture of Northwestern football right now.
I know you've been around college athletics for a long time, mainly covering football. You see this today, and then you see the Bob Huggins story too, which I thought was over, and now he's saying he didn't resign. Just what a bizarre time. Like, I know you've been around a lot of coaches that don't know when to walk away. For Huggins, I don't see what leg he has to stand on here.
No, I'm with you. I mean, Zach, riddle me this. If I told you last Monday, the next 7 days, the two biggest sports headlines will be Britney Spears filing a police report against Victor Wembanyama's security team and Northwestern firing Pat Fitzgerald for basically player mistreatment, you would have asked what I'm smoking.
100%. And then some. I'd have other questions for you.
Right? I mean, if I told you a year ago, Pat Fitzgerald's going to get fired and Chris Collins is going to get extended after a 9-year run of mostly underwhelming performance of the basketball court, you also would have asked what I'm smoking. But it's a very unpredictable business. It's made a lot of people uncomfortable, especially in the coaching world. I can promise you that. There are a lot of coaches out there right now saying, if Pat Fitzgerald can't keep his job in this climate, what hope do we have? Or, you know, people better not be looking into disgruntled players on our team. But it's the reality of the situation right now. They get paid a lot of money. They talk a lot about upholding values and standards. And when they get kind of exposed for falling short in that realm, there are consequences.
Last thing I'll ask you, Matt Fortuna, I want to end this conversation somehow on a fun note. I was thinking about the college football playoff today, and I'm so excited for this year's college football season because there's so much unknown, even at the top. There's not even a great amount of certainty, even with the teams that are usually there. If you had to take a stab at it right now, we won't hold you to it. Who would be your four teams in the playoff?
Good question. Last year we could do this, right, with four teams. It'll be a little more exciting next year with 12, a longer segment. You know, I'll say Alabama. I think they're going to win the SEC. I'm not betting against Kirby Smart in Georgia, but I guess I kind of am. I just think it's really hard to three-peat. Still don't know for sure who's replacing Stetson Bennett. And, look, as long as we're on the subject of off-field behavior or you know, culture problems, it hasn't been the rosiest picture off the field, off season for Kirby Smart's program. And I wonder if that catches up to them at some point too. So I'll go with Alabama, especially after bringing in Tommy Reese as their offense coordinator and having a 2-year run without a national title. I will go with, I'm so caught up in the drama of everything right now. I'm like, oh yeah, we got actual football to talk about in the next couple of weeks. I will go with Ohio State out of the Big Ten.
Ooh, over Michigan. Okay, that's juicy.
I will. Same reason. I think Michigan might have the best roster in the country this year. I also thought they might have last year. They blew it against TCU. But same reason. I think the off-field stuff, whether it was the Jim Harbaugh dalliance, the Shemi Schembechler misfire, a couple other negative headlines out of there, I just think eventually that stuff catches up to you. And I'm surprised, frankly, Jim Harbaugh, despite his recent success, hasn't just drained on everyone there emotionally. So I think that catches up to them this year. I will go with, I'll say Washington. I'm sure I will regret this because they're a popular pick, but I think if healthy, Michael Penix Jr. has a chance to win the Heisman. He was actually on my ballot last year at number three. Last year was the first year in his career where he's played a full season and stayed healthy. And we saw how good he is and how good that program was under him. So I'll go with Washington. And let's go for, I don't know if we'll ever see a run like TCU's last year. That gets more and more improbable the more and more I think about it. Let's go Oklahoma.
Wow.
No blue blood, but they're a dark horse. I know they're picked fourth in the Big 12. When you look at the advanced stats, you look at, I hate to use the word luck, but by definition, how unlucky they were last year. I think that's a program that's due for a bounce back season. And I think they win the Big 12 in their last year. How would that be? If we get Oklahoma to win the Big 12 and let's say USC or UCLA to win the Pac-12, on their way out of both conferences, I think that'd be pretty fitting.
So not ready to say Texas is back is what I take from that.
I'm never ready to say Texas is back. That's one of those I'll believe it when I see it, just like the U.
And I lied. One more that I just want to squeeze in because I know you're on the Notre Dame beat for a while. Where's the confidence level? I know they have Hartman there, Marcus Freeman year two. Where's the confidence at with the Fighting Irish?
I think offensively they have a chance to be explosive in a way that we haven't seen in quite some time. I think the personnel on that side of the ball is really, really special. I think Sam Hartman's the best quarterback they've had, will be the best quarterback they've had there since Brady Quinn. And I think when you've got an experienced quarterback like that who's set conference and school records, you got a chance to have a really good season. I do have concerns about the defense, particularly the defensive line. And look, we can look at the schedule and say they got three big ones, right? Clemson, Ohio State, and USC. Reality of the situation is they got a second-year coach who couldn't beat Marshall at Stanford last year, but beat Clemson up pretty good. So you hope if you're a Notre Dame fan that Marcus Freeman got those mistakes out of his system. They're not going to overlook weaker opponents this year, and they can swing up and maybe put together a 10-2 season. I'll go 9-3 right now, but I think with Hartman slinging the rock back there, they got a chance to be really, really good on offense.
Matt Fortuna, wish it was under better circumstances, but always appreciate you making some time out for us. Thank you.
You and me both, buddy. Take easy.
There you go. Matt Fortuna joining us from The Athletic, one of the best minds covering the game of college football. And I'll tell you, that Final Four that he just gave us for college football, really going out on a limb. I don't think anyone else in the country is going to have those four teams. So he goes not Georgia, not Michigan, takes Bama, Ohio State, okay. And then Washington, who I like, Kalen DeBoer with Michael Penix. And then takes the resurgence of Oklahoma in year two with Brent Venables. Well, Chad Steele released his top 25, preseason top 25. We'll react to that.
9 out of 10 women feel pressure to conform to unspoken hair rules.
To fit in the picture, you have to change your hair.
Your curls are only acceptable if they're perfect.
I don't see anything that tells you to embrace your gray.
People show up with different hair. We should celebrate that.
Let's embrace the beauty of all hair. New Dove Love Your Hair Collection is gentle and sulfate-free with customized skincare ingredients. To love your silver, love your waves, love your curls, love the hair that makes you, you.
And I think that's beautiful.
New Dove Love Your Hair.
I'm joined by Hall of Famer John Smoltz. Smoltzy, tell me this. What's harder, winning a Cy Young or an Emmy Award?
Oh, man. Winning a Cy Young. it takes a lot longer to happen. You know, it's funny when you mention something like that. I just go back to all those years of being predicted to win and just feeling like a failure. But in 96, fortunately, I was able to at least get that off my back because that was starting to bother me.
Download the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
For 25 years, Stamps.com has made mailing and shipping easy. All you need is a computer and printer. Imagine mailing and shipping right from your desk, anytime. No traffic, no waiting, no hassle. Plus, Stamps.com gives you discounts up to 84%. Sign up for Stamps.com today. Use code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus postage and a digital scale. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
On the other side. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Home Run Derby going on right now. You have Julio Rodriguez against Pete Alonso. Rodriguez already has 32 home runs, and he's in bonus time with 47 seconds, I think, remaining. And we'll see what he finishes at. And this is right in Seattle, so you know these fans are going nuts. And we'll see if Pete Alonso is able to oust him once again. So, interesting show today. Big thanks to Matt Fortuna for joining us in the last segment, Dean Thomas, J.P. Crawford, and then a rather bizarre interview with Debo Samuel that ended up with him handing the phone off to the publicist to hang up on us. So that's always fun. But I got to get to a little more college football. We'll move away from the Pat Fitzgerald story. We'll move away from the college athletic story with basketball with Bob Huggins, as we've talked a lot about that this evening. I did see that Phil Steele, I think I said Chad Steele in the last break. That's the Ravens PR guy, so I was confusing my Steels. But the longtime college football writer, Phil Steele, did release his college football rankings the other day. And let's react to that right now. I'm not going to give you his entire top 25, but these were the teams in the top 10. In at number 10, Notre Dame, as you just heard with Matt Fortuna, who just joined us. A lot of optimism with Marcus Freeman in at year number 2. I know they lost to Marshall last year, but you look at this Notre Dame program, they improved towards the end of the season, and you're bringing in Sam Hartman, who I like a lot, who came over from Wake Forest. 9, you have LSU. I know a lot of people crapped on Brian Kelly last year when he did leave Notre Dame to join LSU with the Tigers, and every time I think of LSU now, I always think of their old head football coach, Ed Orgeron, just screaming, "Go Tigers!" But when you look at LSU, they made it to the SEC championship game last year. Now, they still probably are the third best team in the SEC this year. I go Georgia 1, Bama 2. But with Daniels there at quarterback, Brian Kelly, now you're number 2 in the SEC. I'm curious how far they could take it. Mike Norvell has an excellent quarterback. Norvell had a big year last year for him at Florida State. You could question, do you love Clemson coming up this year? As Dabo's still been able to win that conference, but they haven't been able to go back to the college football playoff in a little bit. Are they ready to make that next step? 7 is USC. They have one of the most talked about players in the sport, the most talked about player in the sport, in Caleb Williams because it doesn't look like Arch Manning's going to play this year as it's designed that Quinn Ewers already won the job. So USC, now with Lincoln Riley, final year in the Pac-12. Here's my question for Lincoln Riley. We know that offense is going to put up a ton of points. Is their defense going to be able to make a stop? And we saw their defense come back to bite them two times up against Utah where they blew leads last year. Six, Penn State. You know me, I don't like to say anything positive about Penn State outside of their athletic director, who I like, and Pat Kraft. And I did enjoy their basketball run this year. But from a football standpoint, even though I think James Franklin is an overrated coach, they got a ton of talent. If you're an NFL mock draft nerd, you see like three guys going very early for Penn State next year in all these way too early mock drafts. Five's Ohio State. They have a big game against Penn State, then the game at the end of the year up against Michigan. It's going to be, can they compete up against Michigan? Because last year's not the case. Four in Alabama. Who the heck's going to be a quarterback this year? Three, Michigan. I agree with Matt Fortuna. Michigan may have the best roster in the country. McCarthy, is he going to take the big step this year? You return Blake Corum. You have Donovan Edwards. Last year's, they showed you they can produce a ton of talent on the defensive side of the ball. But for Michigan, it's not only can you beat out Ohio State again and get back to the college football playoff and win the Big Ten for the third year in a row, it's can you get into that national championship game and then hoist that national championship trophy. If it's not this year, I don't know when it's ever going to be for Michigan because they are loaded with talent. And I was surprised here with Phil's ranking of Clemson in at two. DJ Uiagalelei did not work out at Clemson, now is transferred. That offensive line the last 2 years has not been good. There's not been a lot of creativity in the offensive side of the ball. You knew that eventually they were going to go to Cade Klubnik next year, last year. Now he's going to be their starter. With Clemson, they're going to be able to get the most out of Cade Klubnik. But that ACC outside of Florida State, it's not really all that difficult. And Clemson last year got every opportunity, even when it was not a great year for them, to get into that college football playoff. And at every turn, they gave it away. But I was surprised to see Clemson at number two. And then Phil is going to put Georgia in at number one. I can't crush it. You know, last year, what did we say this time? Georgia won, but they lost all this talent. Stetson Bennett's not that great. I know Stetson Bennett now is off of the pros. But he got drafted so early, which I would never have thought that. And then they won a national championship and were better than the team that won 2 years ago. So until someone takes out Georgia, everyone's chasing Georgia. Can't fault him for putting Georgia in at one. So no Texas in that top 10. They were in at number 11. Washington was in at 14. That's been a pick that if you're not going USC, a lot of people have elected to go with Washington. Some other big-name programs, Oregon at 15. You've had Tennessee, who's replacing Hendon Hooker. And you'll see Milton there, quarterback. He's in at 19. Oklahoma in at 20. And then UNC with Drake May in at number 21. And then TCU made the college football playoff last year. And the national championship game was one of the best first years you'll ever see from Sonny Dykes. They were in at 25. So those are some of the notable teams from Phil Steele as he released his college football preseason top 25 rankings. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I haven't seen this guy in a bit because they changed up my schedule last week. Marco Belletti is here. Marco?
Yeah, where the hell you been, man?
They just had me working earlier. It's not like I took off and I went on a vacation. I wish that was the case. They just said, you work earlier, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. And I say, management, yes, we won't have a fight this time on that because that doesn't, in the large scheme of things, if you tell me you're going to work earlier, I'm actually okay with it. It's not the end of the world if we're being honest with people. I love the 6 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 7 p.m. Pacific audience, but I got to listen to management. There's many things you want to fight management on. If they tell you to work earlier, that's not one of them.
No, that's fair. That's definitely fair.
I'm a little skeptical here.
Okay.
To ask you how you've been, because I never know what answer I'm going to get from Marco Belletti when I ask that simple question of how you've been. And I already got hung up once tonight by Debo Samuel, and had a PR person interrupt me in the interview because he didn't like my questions. I'm afraid to ask questions now here, Mark.
I'm fine.
Okay,
I'm fine.
Have a fun weekend with the family and everything?
Sure. Everything's okay. Good, yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of sleep going on, but that's to be assumed and understandable with a one-month-old. That's fine.
So the newborn not sleeping.
He's actually doing pretty good, considering, you know, he's, 6 weeks now? You know, he's doing a pretty good job. It doesn't lead to a lot of sleep, but he's actually not that bad.
Now, I'm going to ask a question where I think you'll have no problem answering it, but If my sister's listening right now, she may not talk to me for maybe 2 months. There was a big debate. My sister was in from Colorado for a month, and she has a 7-month-old, my niece. I don't get involved in the decision-making process.
Nor should you.
It's not my kid.
Mm-hmm.
You do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a mother. and my mother, right? It's her daughter, the first child they're raising, all that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, mothers like to give pieces of advice, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure your mother doesn't shy away from giving advice. So my mom was a little bit annoyed. There was no sleep schedule for the baby. Like, the baby would stay up, like, wakes up in the morning and would stay up till 10 p.m. and then would go to bed. Now, the baby sleeps without a peep throughout the middle of the night. No naps? Not a single noise. No design naps. And that was my mother's reaction. Like, Marco's eyes are...
No, I'm just... Look, if the baby's sleeping all the way through the night and no naps already at 7 months, that's stunning. But go ahead, please.
Yeah. So my mother keeps on saying, you know, baby should set up a schedule, get the baby a nap in the middle of the day. Now, the baby sometimes will doze off at like 2 p.m. and fall asleep for a month. But my mom, she couldn't believe and wrap her head around that there was no schedule. I guess when I was a kid, there was a big sleeping pattern. And my sister, when she was a kid, there was a big sleeping pattern.
I think most people are very regimented
yes.
in making sure that their children have specific exact nap times.
To try to avoid
and
the chaos.
Specific exact bedtimes at night to try to make sure... most babies do somewhat like the routine. So that is definitely helpful. Now, I will say out of personal experience, I've failed in all three of my children thus far. Now, granted, the six-week-old. I haven't failed, but I know I'm going to fail in that regard.
That's pretty quick. You're pretty hard on yourself to say you failed already.
It's difficult to do. We struggle with that anyway, but more importantly, I'm not home at night. My wife's got all three of them.
So you don't really know what's going on besides what your wife's reporting.
Well, no, I mean, but I also know that like during the day to get like naps, we're not necessarily in control all day because she works, I work, I have to sleep sometimes during the day. Like there's chaos in our schedules, mm-hmm. which makes it more chaotic for your baby's schedule. Like if you have them go to whatever, some sort of daycare, the daycare sets that up for you and they run that schedule and they run a tight ship. If you're home with your child... You could do whatever you want, and if you have the ability to make it a regimented schedule, so be it, and more power to you. Unfortunately, some people don't have their own schedule situated, like myself, who gets his naps basically like a child in different spots and, you know, an hour in here and 2 hours there. We find it
difficult.
You get
more nap time than my niece, that sounds like.
Apparently, yeah. I also don't get to sleep through the night, but hey, what are you going to do? No, I mean, like, that's right. So it depends. Everyone likes to tell everyone what to do. I'm a big believer in... you do what you got to do to survive. You got questions and you need advice and you need help. So be it. And you lean on who you trust. But when people unsolicited advice, no matter where it's coming from, and I've said this out loud to people around me before, this is not striking and new, nor are you surprised to hear me say it. If it's unsolicited to me, chances are I don't want to hear it. And most people don't want to hear it. When you need advice, you seek it. When you just sit back, good chance, no matter what somebody's telling you, even if you know they're right, you look at them and go, great, that's true. So how do you want me to do this? Because you've got the answers, but you go, well, you have to do this. Okay, are you working my schedule? Are you sleeping my hours? Do you have, you know, my spouse? Do you have my other children? Like, everyone's got all the things that they want you to do, but they don't actually have to do what you do. That's where you get hung up and get into some problems.
Now, I had a little bit of a bleep-eating grin throughout your entire mm-hmm. monologue right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anything that you said.
Mm-hmm.
I already got a text.
Okay, I'm sure you do.
But not for my sister.
Yeah.
Mama Gelb is listening. She's saying, I'm listening, and you tell Marco I give good advice.
I'm sure she does. That's the thing, though. When it's unsolicited, it goes over your head.
Yes.
Because one, you're not receiving it. You're not receptive to it. You need to seek out the advice. And good chance, if you're a parent for the first time, whether you got a 7-month-old, a 7-week-old, or a 7-year-old, there's a good chance you're going to stop and go, what am I doing wrong? What do I need to do here? Mm-hmm. Because you're confused. You're going through it for the first time, and you're going to go through the bumps and all the different things. But when you don't ask and it's just brought to you, even with good intentions, the first reaction is going to be, the hell do you know? That's how we all are. Now, maybe I'm just a big giant jerk and I'm the only one that thinks that way, but I find that difficult to believe. The brain functions that way. We're not receptive until we're ready for it. So I would say, let them wait. When they want it, they'll come to you.
That's
hard to do, but that's the way you got to do it.
Dr. Phil, Dr. Valetti in the house.
I try. Now, I also don't have grown children. I haven't been through the ringers.
Yeah,
and I'm not sitting there looking at it going, what are you doing? I haven't done that. That's why every situation is different, and everybody has to, you know, do what they feel is best.
Yes. Last thing I'll ask you, this has nothing to do with babies. This goes back to sports. I read something this morning, and I don't know if it was just some random Twitter user, if it was some journalist. It was in the haze of just waking up and doing the stupid thing of just looking at your phone right away. And it has grown on me throughout the day. I saw someone say earlier this morning that Ellie De La Cruz, who's only played in 30 games and has been sensational, should be in the All-Star game tomorrow night. Now, my first reaction to that, Marco, was that's stupid. That's like violating, right, the history and what it means to be an All-Star. But the more and more I thought about it throughout the day, Marco, the All-Star game isn't what it used to be. And the All-Star, everyone now, every team has to have an All-Star. And so many guys, like, don't go to the game to begin with. And I'll give credit to the guys for the Home Run Derby. Like, there's actual stars of the Home Run Derby, the dunk contest. We have Mac McClung, who ended up doing a good job, but he should have never been in a dunk contest to begin with. And Jericho Sims, right? Guys like that that are in the dunk contest, not the biggest star power. But the more and more I thought about it, Major League Baseball doesn't have many isolated windows to market their stars. Where if Rob Manfred, who I can't stand, said tomorrow, you know what, I made an executive decision, I'm putting Ellie De La Cruz in the All-Star game, he is one of the more exciting players of the game. Even though it's only 30 games, I couldn't crush a commissioner for that because it's about marketing the young stars of the game, really, the All-Star game now.
I'm a little torn on this. I like the marketing, and I think that they need to do a much better job of getting their young stars in front of eyeballs and really kind of showcasing what Major League Baseball is all about.
Yeah.
However, you do have to earn your place on that team. Because if you do not, and we open this up to just
Pandora's
anybody,
box.
To me, I think we're leading, and it's not because of the fans and the marketing and all those things, but inside that clubhouse and inside that locker room, there is the talk of like, look, man, I know you're good, but you don't belong here now. Guess what? Work on it and get there, because then you'll earn it, and then you'll be here on the right, you know, statue, right preference, whatever you want to call it. And I think that's important for the player. Because if you make a player who's only played 20 or 30 games and you put him in the All-Star game and you put him in a situation that he has not earned, now all of a sudden he has to earn the respect of the guys around him. And the other guys around him are going to look at him and go, what have you done? I know you're supposed to be good. You've looked good. But you haven't accomplished this.
Let me ask you this.
That's dangerous.
Are you saying that in his own clubhouse or in the what would be the NL
clubhouse? I would say that in the entire All-Star game.
Okay.
NL, AL,
yeah.
Everyone there. We're all... You know,
everyone
it up,
in his locker room.
Everyone
knows
joking about it and everyone having fun with it. But there are going to be times where they look over and you go, Rook, you don't belong here. And it's not because we don't think you're talented. It's because you didn't earn it. And there is something to be said for earning it. Now, whether that's a fan vote and you go, well, they didn't earn that. No. They earned that through their prior play and the fans' recognition of them. So they earned a vote that maybe they didn't earn on the field, but they earned it prior. You, at some point, you have to earn something. Nothing can be handed to you. That would be completely handed to you. That I have a problem with. If he's that good, and we all think he is, and he's going to be that good,
next year,
you put him in the face of the game. And that's what you got to do in the All-Star game. But I feel like you got to earn your spot.
And the last thing I'll say, because I know we're way past the break and we got to get to it, but I will just say, for Major League Baseball, it's actually a good thing now that we've been having this conversation.
Right.
Because we've talked about Otani a lot in the regular season. We've talked now, the last 30 games, about Ellie De La Cruz. For most of the time, the only time Major League Baseball is getting talked about on this network is if someone tested positive for some performance-enhancing drug, there's some cheating scandal, or some old guy is just yelling about a bat flip.
And this is the problem, because we've had stars in the last, say, 10 years or whatever it is, and we have not done a good job of marketing them.
Trout.
The Bryce Harpers, the Mike Trouts, the Mookie Betts. It's not like we haven't seen, we haven't seen a crop of stars like this. Yes, you have. But Major League Baseball has not done a good job of putting them on the face of the game and putting them in your face. NBA does it. Even the NFL does it, where the game is actually more important than the stars, but we still know the top players. Major League Baseball does a terrible job of putting the guys that they need to out in front and making them the stars of the game. Now, they have to do their end of the bargain. A la Fernando Tatis Jr., can't get in trouble.
Yeah.
You're going to be the face of the game. Can't get in trouble.
I thought it was ringworm, though.
That's what I mean. Like, there are responsibilities that come along with it, but we baseball itself has not done a good enough job to get the younger 100% player out in front. But to me, that player also has the responsibility of earning it and then keeping it.
So you're 50-50 on this, it seems like.
I would be more towards the idea of, no, you can't do it.
Gotcha.
I like
but you
the
understand
idea
of, the marketing.
The marketing is great. And for the game itself, I can't kill you. Same way, like the NBA midseason tournament.
That's
I think
stupid.
It's asinine. However, if you're going to market the game and it's going to make money and it gets eyeballs there, just like extra wild card teams are going to do, I don't have to like it, but I understand it. Runner at second base in extra innings. I hate it. I get why they do it. And it's good for the game, so that's good for them. However, you still have a part of earning certain things when it's individual performance. To me, that you're crossing a line now. I can't just put a guy in the team on the team just because I like his name. Can't work like that.
Hey, this is Howie.
And this is Nick
from the Backstreet Boys.
And you're listening to the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. And guess what?
Zach is back. All right.
He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show.
All right, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Since Marco Belletti was just spewing great, and I mean great, life advice. We only have about 2 to 3 minutes here, so we will blow off the closing bell today. I'll tell you, would have given a stock down to Northwestern, would have given a stock down to Bob Huggins. Maybe Deebo Samuel would have got a stock down, too, after hanging up on us.
Ashley.
You know what? What is the PR person supposed to do? He clearly gave the phone to her, and then she has to communicate, so she had to do his dirty work, I guess. And then we would have found a way to give a stock up to, like, one or two people. But the Home Run Derby is going on right now, and the first round is over. Randy Rosarena defeated my pick of Elias Garcia, 24 home runs to 17. Luis Robert Jr., 28 home runs to Adley Rutschman's 27. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 26 home runs to Mookie Betts is 11. And then Julio Rodriguez in front of the home crowd out there in Seattle, 41 home runs to Pete Alonso's 21 home runs. So now we're in the semifinals. Randy Rosarena going up against Luis Robert Jr. And you have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. going up against Julio Rodriguez. And that's the beauty of the Home Run Derby. Folks, you just heard the names. You got Vladimir Guerrero Jr., just for starters, against Julio Rodriguez. And in the previous round, you had Vladdy Guerrero Jr. up against Mookie Betts. That is star power. And if I could, I have a lot of wishes for the NBA. But in terms of their All-Star weekend, the actual Sunday of All-Star weekend in hoops, I don't really care for. They made some changes, make it a little bit more exciting. But that Saturday night is what I love. That three-point contest, I'm always a sucker for it. But the slam dunk contest can be such a great thing once again. But you need the stars involved. Like, don't get me wrong, Mac McClung put on a show this year, but he's Mac McClung. Go give me the stars once again in the slam dunk contest. Major League Baseball, I don't get a lot of things right. They get their Home Run Derby correct. Now, also, probably another reason why we got it right so far is that I'm sitting here hosting the show, so I don't have to listen to the broadcast coverage. Because last year, man, Carl Ravitch sounded like a robot. And I even saw he did some interview leading up to this that the Derby's the toughest thing to call just because how quickly the Home Run Derby does move. I still miss Chris Berman on the Home Run Derby. Back, 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 gone! So, at this point, though, you eventually got to get some new life in the booth. Luis Robert Jr. has 6 home runs. Randy Rosarena has 35. As they are in the semifinals, we'll see who will advance from this one, but looking pretty good right now for Randy Rosarena. All righty, that's the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Fun Monday show. Big thanks, because I'm polite, to Deebo Samuel. And then our real thank yous to J.P. Crawford for stopping by. Dean Thomas, excellent, excellent, excellent recap of the big UFC card over the weekend, and then Matt Fortuna. And a big thank you to Kevin Wall as well, and each and every one of you for calling, listening, and tweeting. You can always give me a follow on the good old cesspool of Twitter and Instagram, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. We'll be back tomorrow for a big Tuesday edition show as we get you set and react to the All-Star game. Alrighty, everybody, we out. Bye-bye. Peace!
Summer's always the perfect time to invite your friends and family over for a backyard barbecue. And when you're looking to make your get-together a little better for you, Beyond Meat has you covered. Beyond's products are delicious, simple to cook, and can be added into so many different meals. It's seriously that easy. Like the new Beyond sausages, available in hot Italian style or brat. They're packed with protein, have that true meaty flavor, and sizzle great on the grill, just like you're used to. Plus, they're made with simple, plant-based ingredients that you can feel good about. And the best part, your friends may not even be able to tell. Look for the new Beyond sausage, now with new meatier taste, at your local store. For great recipes and where to buy Beyond sausage, go to beyondmeat.com. And get ready to summer better with Beyond.